Back at the Savannah Road, Stewart had received reinforcements and was massing for a charge across the road.
We better get some help over here damn quick.
Help came rushing up just seconds before Stewart was beginning his charge. And the Union officer held his men back, for he was now facing the massed troops of General Chalmers and Bowen. Jamie's troops were ordered back. He read between the lines of that decision, curved his tongue, and pulled his people back. Stewart's brigade and several brigades from Ohio and Illinois were now facing the bulk of two divisions of Confederates, and they made ready to be slaughtered. But their orders were to hold at all costs. At just about the same time Stewart was preparing a defense, Rebel General Cheatham urged his men forward, and they went charging toward a Union stronghold that was called the Hornet's Nest. Closer they came, then closer, and the Yankees held their fire. When the charging rebels were less than 100 yards away, the Union troops opened fire. Confederate bodies lay in heaps and piles. Some had been blown apart by grape shot at nearly point-blank range. Moments after that attack failed, Bragg ordered Colonel Gibson to lead a bayonet charge against the Hornet's Nest. Gibson led men from Louisiana and Arkansas into the battle. They were thrown back at a terrible cost of human life. Again, the rebels charged and managed to breach the lines, only to be thrown back once more. The battleground was now covered in blue mixed with gray. Exhausted, Gibson was replaced by Colonel Allen. Allen's charge was beaten back, with Allen losing almost half of his men. Gibson rallied his troops and charged the Hornet's Nest for a third time. And for a third time, his battered brigade was thrown back. Gibson had no more men to give to the cause on this bloody Sunday. While Gibson's brigade was being destroyed trying to take the Hornet's Nest, Johnson was preparing to personally lead a charge against Union troops just to the rebel right of the Hornet's Nest. Jamie and his men had joined up with Jackson's men on the other side of the Savannah Road and were locked in combat. The Marauders had dismounted and were fighting as infantry. Johnston led the charge into the peach orchard, now in full bloom. It was to be a successful charge, for the Union troops fled under the onslaught of Confederates. But it was to be Albert Sidney Johnston's last charge. A mine ball tore through his right leg, and he bled to death, lying on the ground amid pink peach petals that had been torn loose by cannon fire. The command of the rebel army in the west now was passed to Beauregard. But Beauregard was a mile and a half to the rear at his own command post. So far back from the front lines, he didn't have the foggiest notion what was actually going on. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon when General Johnston was killed. It took almost an hour for a runner to find Beauregard.
Bring me up to date. I need field reports.
If we don't start using artillery up in the middle and start flanking the Yankees left and right, we're gonna be chewed up and had for supper.
Your commander on the right, Colonel?
They're all dead, General.
You are the ranking officer over there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Then you are in command. Return to your position and wait until the last echoes of cannon fire have ceased, Colonel. Then take your right flank and swing your men in.
Jamie waited with the remnants of half a dozen different shattered and battered commands that had gathered around him. Soon more than 70 cannons began to lash out shell and shot from the Confederate side. The cannonade lasted for about 45 minutes, and it demoralized those Union troops it was directed upon, mainly those defending the Hornet's Nest. The rebel gunners were pouring on the fire, sending more than 190 shot and shell per minute into the Yankee lines. The center of the Union line began buckling and finally gave way. On the rebel left, Jamie and his men charged and put the Union forces into a wild retreat. On the rebel right, Sherman and the other Union generals began to withdraw. Jamie and his men smashed into the Union lines and secured their objective on the rebel right. Jamie, following orders received during the devastating cannonade, stopped its advance and held, allowing his men some much-needed rest. The Union troops defending the Hornet's Nest began to scatter as the word came down the line that it was every man for himself, where they were very nearly surrounded by bloodthirsty rebels. Most of the Union troops headed for the river, or where they hoped in all the smoke and confusion the river would be. Several battered units of Confederate cavalry had linked up with Jamie. Jamie sent Little Ben Pardee, limping badly but very much still in action, galloping on a fresh horse to find Beauregard and get permission to attack straight on towards Pittsburgh Landing. But Little Ben could not find the commanding general. for the general by this time had moved all the way over to the rebel left to join Morgan's cavalry, smashing against Sherman's forces. Jamie obeyed orders and held his position. In the center of the Union line, General Prentice was forced to surrender more than 2,500 of his men, all that he had left after more than a dozen bloody charges against his position. Troops from Iowa began to show the white flag. They were cut off, surrounded, out of ammunition, and their situation was hopeless. General Grant kept looking toward the rear, where more than 6,000 fresh troops under the command of General Wallace were expected to come marching in. It was 5 o'clock in the afternoon of this bloody Sunday. At the river, hundreds of Union soldiers, confused and leaderless, were swimming across to the other side, having thrown away or lost their rifles. Fresh Union troops, almost 40,000 strong, who had just arrived on the scene, couldn't understand what was happening. Union cavalrymen tried to beat the frightened men back with the flat sides of their swords, but were soon overwhelmed by the hundreds of retreating soldiers. As for the soldiers, both Union and Confederate, they were completely exhausted as night fell. Most had not eaten in 24 hours, and they just simply could not go on. Fighting for that day was over.